Good morning. Now, before we look at the next instalment of the series on Exodus, I would like to say on behalf of Christine and myself how very much we've appreciated the welcome that you have given to us. And perhaps in particularly, I would like to say how much we have appreciated your kindness and your prayers concerning the recent death of my mother. Thank you. So, over these weeks, we've seen under Moses' leadership the coming out of Israel on a journey to the Promised Land, and God intervening with one miracle after another. And so, following the excitement, following all that God has done with these people, Israel now finds itself in what has been described as the beginning of the wilderness wanderings. They're on their way to the Promised Land. What should have taken them 2 years, in fact, took 45. Somewhat humorously, someone has said, well, this was due to the simple fact that, as usual, men don't ask for directions. Well, let's look at this chapter 15 that we have been reading today. And there is a very real sense that in looking at this chapter 15, it's a stock-taking chapter. It was for Israel, and it may well be for us today, that we really begin to apply some of the things that we've already learnt. And certainly there are three M's in this chapter that I want to focus on this morning. The first is Moses, because after all, we begin the chapter with his praise for God's intervention, for helping him lead the people. We're then introduced to Miriam again. Miriam, of course, we are aware, Moses' older sister, and was very instrumental in looking out for Moses when he was placed by his mother in a basket and then taken in by Pharaoh's daughter. We look at her. And then we're introduced to the third M towards the end of the chapter, and this is the place called Mara. And so we're going to be looking at the importance of Moses, Miriam, and Mara. As I say, we're in the wilderness of Shur. And we're going to be seeing, as we take stock, what was Moses' mission? What was it that God was calling Moses to do? Perhaps we need to be thinking about what God is calling us to. We then look at what could only be described as a change of motive for Miriam. And so we're going to be looking at Miriam's motives. And then we're going to find ourselves arriving at a place that appeared to have all the potential of meeting need, and yet in fact failed. Mara, the oasis, became the bitter lake. And perhaps we can look ourselves at times when we go through bitter experiences and learn from it. As Israel is now journeying, we could perhaps use a phrase, you can take the people out of Egypt, but can you take Egypt out of the people? And I believe that this chapter 15 is a wonderful way in answering that question. To begin to see that God was not only rescuing them, not only redeeming them, but he was transforming them into his people. And that process of transformation was not instant or immediate. there would be some difficulties, there would be some challenges, and we're introduced to them right here in chapter 15. So let's look at these together. What was the mission of Moses? The mission of Moses was not a sprint, but a marathon. And that's something we all need to remember, that we come into an awareness of the living God. We come into a relationship with him through Jesus Christ. But it's lifelong, and he's in the process of changing us. As we see for Moses, he ends up becoming what I would judge to be quite a wealthy shepherd. And over that period of time, perhaps nearly 40 years, he'd become a very experienced shepherd, confident in his own abilities. His staff was the badge or the sign of what he was doing and what he could do. And it's interesting that God takes this very sign, this very badge of office, his very confidence perhaps, his very identity, and God takes it from him in order to show him that now his confidence, his self-sufficiency, his abilities, his resources, his opportunities, they would have to be released to God. And I note just one or two things that God did with Moses right at the very beginning, and they're worth just reflecting on again. He told him to lay his staff down. Lay his shepherding down, if you would. And when he did that, when he laid down his staff, he was laying down something of his confident identity as a shepherd looking after sheep. From now on, he would be a shepherd, but a very different shepherding, a shepherding of people rather than animals. But his identity was to be in God. God was to be his sufficiency. God was going to be his standing. Just like when we become Christians, we have a change. It's as if, like the shops say, under new management. The Apostle Paul, in his first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 6 and verse 20, says this: "We are not our own, for we were bought with a price," thinking of all that Jesus had accomplished on the cross for us. Retirement can sometimes cause people to have a sense of loss of identity. We need to be saying, whether we are working, being paid for that work, whether retired and we're engaging other activity, our identity was not on our career or our popularity or our status, but our identity is as a Christian, as a child of God. And if it is that we have just recently retired, to some extent I include myself in that, there's a sense now in looking forward and saying, "And what now, Lord? What is it that you've got for me now?" The second thing that putting the staff down was that he laid down the source of his income. He would now find that he would be reliant on God and God's people for the source of his security, his income, and so on. It reminds me of the lovely story of George Muller, that brethren man who felt God's call upon his life to run an orphanage, take people that are homeless, without parenting, and to look after these children. And there's a story told that The children were sitting round to the table, and there was nothing on the table. But George Muller says, we are now going to give thanks for what God has provided. I imagine that one or two of those children must have thought, he's lost it. There's nothing on the table. But George Muller gave thanks. Lord, you have always made a provision. We give you thanks for what provision you will make for us today. Within a short space of time, two people arrived at the door. Bread and milk and many other provisions from the big house up on the hill were given. People who said in their testimony, I felt God was saying to bring this to you. God was the provider. So in laying down the source of his income, he took up the source of God. Third thing we see in Moses in his call was that he was to lay down the source of his influence. It was obvious that he was not going to be popular all the time. Sheep don't normally argue back. They may well go in different directions that they need to be brought in. They may get stuck in a crevice and have to be hooked out with your staff, but they don't answer back. Hundreds of people will bemoan their lot and see Moses as the instrument of their displeasure. No, he would have to recognise that this was a period of time when he might be popular one day and be very unpopular the next. Moses was to learn to be a man of humility and faithfulness. This is what God was saying in chapter 15. From here on, you need to trust what you cannot see. You need to trust me to get you to where I want you to be. Interestingly enough, the staff of the shepherd became the rod of God as one time after another, the very rod of God was to bring about these miraculous things, as we've already seen. You could say, in fact, that it represented the Holy Spirit. Just because we are those people who, having received Christ, we have our identity in him, we are living under his calling, so he equips us, not with the physical rod of God, but with the blessed Holy Spirit. The second person, the second M in our chapter today, is Miriam. And as I've already mentioned, Miriam is introduced to us, the older sister of Moses, and she was faithful insofar as she kept an eye and in keeping an eye on Moses, saw where the basket ended up in the bulrushes, saw the Pharaoh's daughter come, quick to say, I know someone who could be a wet nurse, as she thought about her own mother. And there's a lot to commend her. In this story, it is Miriam, alongside Moses, who is leading the praise and leading the worship. She's seen as someone who had a relationship with God to the extent that she's called a prophetess, speaking God into the situation, encouraging, may I say, the women in the praise and worship and faith in God. And God blessed her. And we see these wonderful heart motives very early on. But something changed. If we were to look at Numbers chapter 12, we read that she became jealous. She became unhappy with her younger brother having the status that he had of God's man leading the people. So envious was she that she began to grumble. I believe that was rooted in pride. I believe that she felt that both Moses, Aaron, and herself should be the earthly trinity, if you like. That they equally should be leading the people. And that is not what God had in mind. And we read in this chapter that she consorted with Aaron and suggested they should have equal authority. Sadly, God punished her. It's very difficult because the Bible tells us that she got leprosy, and there is no way that I would want you to think that any physical illness or disease that we get is automatic punishment. We live in a fallen world and we are subject to illness, we are subject to many things. Sometimes our physical bodies are made to feel difficult, or we struggle with them because of emotional and attitudes that we hold. But I wouldn't want anyone to think that suddenly here, this is sickness and it's a judgment of God. But what we are left in no doubt as we read is that God needed to teach Miriam an important lesson, that he is in charge. And when she was challenging Moses and she was seeking to put herself in an equal position, she was actually challenging God. She was not content to let God bless her and to serve in the way that he had called her. I find that very moving because I wonder how we treat one another. Perhaps sometimes we can be jealous of others in the fellowship, or jealous of who has this job or that job, or perhaps we feel we should have it. Jealousy is not so far away from us. And then when jealousy is fully grown, it leads to an action perhaps that is really far from Christian, far from right. I think there's a wonderful story in the Bible of King David. As you know, Saul was made the first king of Israel. But Saul, towards the end of his life, wandered from the main pathway. He behaved in ways that were not appropriate. And as a consequence, he forfeited what really he could have had right to the very end. Because before he died, God raised up David to take his place. And Saul was jealous of David. So much so that he set out to destroy David, to kill him. And when David, hidden in a cave with his faithful followers, saw that there was an opportunity to remove Saul, to kill him, and therefore get him off his back, he was encouraged to do so by others, and he turned to his men and he said, "I will not lay a hand on the Lord's anointed." Perhaps he had every justification, but he said, "No, I will not do that." And I think we need to get a fellowship of people where we recognise that not everyone makes us happy, not everyone does right by us. But we need to see not only those for whom Christ died out among our community, but we also need to see within the church those for whom or in whom Christ lives and respond to them in grace and love. Interestingly enough, Miriam is a name that we all get Mary from. And look at the difference in Mary, the mother of Jesus, over this that I've just told you about Miriam. Mary started well and finished well. I think of that Magnificat, as we call it, her song of praise, that this humble maidservant should be blessed to be the earthly bearer of Jesus. Now, she learnt humility. I don't find there's jealousy there. Well, the last M is the M which is more of a place than it is a person. It is a place that actually means bitter. Mara means bitter. The nation had been walking and they were in need of water. Most people can go without food for many days, but not water. I can imagine that they'd thought to themselves, all that Red Sea that we crossed, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. That was the line from Coleridge, Ancient Mariner, when at sea everywhere was salt water. And victory can turn to despair. They've made this wonderful crossing, the sense of victory, the sense of praise, only to be plunged into a bitter experience. The water could not be drunk. I wonder how many times we've felt that we've been delivered from a difficulty only to be plunged into a worse one. But this was God's testing time. This was God's maturing of the people of God. And sometimes he will use these things in our lives in order to build our faith and to mature us. You may recall, if you're familiar with the Old Testament stories, of a lady called Naomi. Naomi lived around the time of the Judges period, and her and her husband found that in living in Bethlehem, that in fact there was a famine. And so she and her husband and her two sons go to a place called Moab. While they are there, the two sons take Moabite wives. But after a period of time, both boys die, and the husband of Naomi dies. And so here is Naomi, and she hears that Bethlehem has now got bread. And so she wanders back from Moab to Bethlehem. She takes back with her what started out to be two daughters-in-law, but ended up only one, and that one was Ruth. And when they arrive back in Bethlehem, Naomi says this. When she's greeted by people who knew her, she says, "Don't call me Naomi," which means pleasant, "but call me Mara, for the Lord has dealt very bitterly with me." I think it's interesting, actually. She said, she didn't say, "I've lost my faith." She actually said, "I have a sense in which I've been bitterly treated by God." There was never the lack of faith. It was just she couldn't quite grasp. But he was sovereign. Therefore, that's what she accepted. Well, we need to be people who understand that. Well, as time goes on, God makes a provision. And Moses is told to put a tree into the water. And in doing that, the water changes from being bitter to being sweet. It's what God did with the bitterness that in fact made all the difference. And I think it's very encouraging that there are many times when God intervenes in our bitter lives and changes them. That lovely verse that we know so well from Romans chapter 8. In all things God works for an ultimate good. He's not saying that what we're going through is a good thing. But what he's saying is, I'm going to weave those things and give purpose to them that you may not see now, but I will bring it into an ultimate good. I want to conclude this by saying, yes, God did make the bitter waters into sweet waters. I think it's interesting that the word Mara is where we get the word myrrh. And it will be shortly that we will be thinking about these three wise men who brought their gifts to the baby, gold, frankincense and myrrh. Gold for a king. Frankincense for his spiritual priestly office. And myrrh because he would go to a cross. There would be a bitter way that he would travel in order to bring us to life. The very last couple of sentences of chapter 15 tell us that they moved on to a place called Elim, where there were many trees, many palm trees, and many waterways. And in fact, the whole thing looked abundant, and it was a great provision, the place called Elim, God's provision. And maybe it is that we are always looking for the big experience, the wonderful occasion, the wonderful place. But I'll just leave you with this thought. There's no mention at Elim of a covenant that God made with the people, that as they serve him, he would be faithful to them. There's no miracle of changing the water. It was in Mara that God made the covenant. It was in Mara that he did the miracle. And maybe we have to recognise too that it's not always on top of the mountain where we see the blessing of God, but sometimes it's in the valley. And we need to look for it. And be aware that he can do things in the valley experience. And so I say to you, as we conclude this chapter, remember Moses and his calling. What is he calling you to? Remember Miriam and how her motives changed because the enemy got in. Let's hold true in our motives, in our faithfulness to God and God's people. And when we walk through the valley of the shadow, remember that he is there and just as capable to redeem and transform and work miracles and bring us to our promised land. Amen.